And it's great to have in the studio for the very last time our Monday football panel.
What do you mean, great to have us for the last time?
Well, this is the last time you'll be called the football panel. Football's over now.
It is.
This is like, what do you call it, the farewell, the breakup? We're having a bit of a party in here. I've brought a cake, as you can see.
There was no milk in the fridge. It's been off to a bad start, our party.
We're a bit strapped for cash here, so...
That's all right.
But black coffee's just as good, isn't it?
I suppose so.
So, we've got to talk about the grand final. It happened over the course of the weekend. Well, what does your grand final tradition usually... And we should say hello to Bucket as well, incidentally.
Hello, Mitch. How are you this morning?
Very good. What does your grand final tradition normally involve, if any?
Well, I can tell you now, well, I used to go to a grand final, we'll go to the grand finals, and it got to the stage whereby with the wonderful inventions of plasma televisions and all that sort of thing, it really is a lot more comfortable to watch it on a big screen.
Agreed.
Than going through the hassles of the crowd and the cost. The cost is just unbelievable. I mean, on Saturday, if you could imagine what some people paid for a seat that perhaps followed the Sydney Swans, they'd be saying, gee, they could have put that towards a holiday overseas or something.
Just a member of my family ended up coming down from Brisbane. He's a mad Swans supporter. He was in standing room only, paid for flights, accommodation, and...
Oh.
That's painful, isn't it?
It is very painful. I didn't think they still had standing room at the MCG.
Yes, they certainly do.
Behind
yes.
the seats on level one, yeah.
Okay. A lot of people go to the grand final early so they can get on the fence in the standing room area because you do have a very good view from that area
say,
and you're undercover.
Yeah, well, we used to do that, of course, before they had the magnificent new facilities in the MCG. Yeah. I mean, the whole southern stand and the northern stand, as we called it then, there was massive standing room there, and you used to get there at about 10 o'clock in the morning. And got up if you wanted to go to the little boys' room after that, because you looked around behind you and it was just a sea of people. You could not possibly move. And the best thing in those days were we used to have aluminium cans. Well, probably they still are called aluminium cans now. They were very strong ones, and you'd take them in. You could bring as much as you like. You'd bring them in. But you didn't bring them in to drink, of course, Bucket. You brought them in for standing room platforms.
Yes, and for other uses too, if they couldn't get to the toilet.
Oh, I wasn't going to bring that up, but never mind. Yeah, I'm glad you led me into that. But the tradition now, I must admit, Mitch, is that I enjoy just meeting a few friends, the same group of friends we meet up with every year. We go out to, we went out to Buckley's this year. We've been doing that for a couple of times and had a wonderful afternoon of socialising out there. And I must admit, it was more socialising than watching the football, because after quarter time, Bucket, I was just about falling asleep.
Oh, I think a lot of people were. Mitch, I've got a very interesting question to ask you, and I don't know whether you'll know the answer or not.
I'm nervous now.
Basically, on the television, they say 1.3 million people watch the game in Victoria. How do they arrive at that figure? Because in my case, there was about 15 people watching one television set. How do they arrive at 1.3?
It's called Oztam, which does the ratings, and a select sample group of people get a box that is attached to their TV, and it knows what you're watching. And I think at any given time, you also have to punch in how many people are there watching it with you. If that makes sense. So then that box reports back to Oztam HQ, and then they can extrapolate that and say around Victoria how many people were watching. So there you go.
In Australia, 2.8 million people, I reckon, was watching the game. Like, I'd like to know the world figures. A lot of countries, they get the paid TV, just what the world figures were watching that game.
I think per capita, AFL would probably have one of the best followings of sport in the world, when you think that we only have a mere 23 million people that could possibly be interested.
Yep, good
that's
point.
Pretty impressive.
Good point. I don't know. They do those things, Bucket. It's good explanation by Mitch, but no one's ever asked me in a survey what I watch on TV.
I've never been asked either,
and never had one of those. What do you call those boxes? You punch in the numbers and everything. And
before radio, it's a little bit less sophisticated. They give you a diary for 2 weeks, and you have to take a diary of every radio station you listen to and what time. But luckily, we don't have ratings in Geelong, because obviously we win them all. You know, there's no point having ratings when the competition's so unfair, is there?
No, I agree, but never mind. But anyway, I was obviously, most people had it on. You go to a club, of course, and you've got one big TV going in the corner, and you could have 100 people in the club, but only 10 are watching it. So you don't know how you can work those stats either.
I can't work that out. I just can't believe, because, everybody I've spoken to has watched some part of that game on Saturday, and that's, look, that happens each and every year.
Really. The little gizmo meter that Mitch was talking about, it'd be interesting to see how it dropped off after quarter time. Probably a massive... a lot of people watching it to start with, and then it would have dropped off a fair crack, I reckon, after that.
Certainly so.
I have to admit that I sort of didn't watch most of the second half.
No, I'm great to confess that one. I just completely lost interest completely. I thought it was a really big disappointment. I tell you what, though, and if you blokes, I know we don't encourage gambling.
No.
But no, we definitely don't do that. But I know Sportsbet, the dividend for 10 goals and over, in the paper yesterday, which obviously wasn't a bad bet when you think about it. You just take it for fun, $10 an over, and you think it might be a blowout. And if you picked Hawthorn, how many guess how much it paid for a dollar?
I don't know, Dick. I don't follow the betting.
No, I'll tell you what. No, it didn't pay $10. It paid $72.
Wow.
For that's a $1 dividend.
Yeah. Is
so
that
if
for
you put
a
on
margin,
lazy 10 on it...
That's for a margin of 10 goals.
It had to be at 60 points and over on sports bets. So if you're just on a two-horse race, and if they won by 10 goals or more, you picked up $72 for your dollar. So if you obviously put a lazy 10 on it, you ready for it, Bucket? $720.
Well, that's right.
Didn't even use my calculator.
And basically, some people would invest like that too, because the longer they price, they take a little chance. They put
just
on their $10 and pays for their whole day out, doesn't it?
It's a massive, massive dividend when you think about it.
Yeah,
but anyway, and I think there's a quaddy if you pick the who was in front quarter time, half time, three quarter time in the final result. Admittedly, had to get a certain point range, but that paid about $4,500.
That's right.
Yes, but how likely is
I
that?
I know, that was a bit, you got a bit harder to work that one out.
But I agree with you. I don't know what you think, Bucket. But these days I prefer to just watch the grand final at home. The only grand final I've ever been to is 2008. We lost to Hawthorn. It was devastating. And it sort of put me off going to any more grand finals ever.
Oh, yeah. So in other words, you're sooked.
Yes.
Basically,
I'm happy to concede that.
I do like to go and see the games live, but I can understand why people, stay home and watch it, in comfort, in their lounge room or out in the garage or somewhere.
And
like
at a club, because the club's now more sophisticated than they were 10, 20 years ago.
Dick, your favourite item every year, the entertainment. What did you think of it, Dick? Just remember, we're getting a bit older, we mightn't quite understand.
Old and grumpy and set in our ways or whatever it is. I thought that Ed Sheeran?
Sharon?
I didn't know who he was.
Well, I called him Sharon because the footy used to look like the same, but Sharon, they both had red hair.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, nice enough young kid, I must admit. I saw him interviewed before the game at the Federation Square by Richo and Lingy and those guys, and I thought what a wonderfully polite young man he was. Wasn't one of these typical sort of youngsters coming through that are, every second word is like and, all that sort of stuff. So I'm getting old and grubby. But I thought he was very articulate and I thought he was a very nice young man. But I'm not so sure about where the superstar status comes in because his singing wasn't exactly sort of that crash. It wasn't wow factor, was it?
Oh, fair dinkum. I just believe it. Like I spoke to several people who was at a gathering and it was turn off stuff for them.
It really
and
was.
Also, there was a couple of African people there watching the event, and they were certainly impressed with the football. They loved the football, but they says for that entertainment, it was very, very poor.
Very ordinary. Yes. And then, of course, they brought out another ageing superstar in Tom Jones, My Delilah and the Green Grass at Home.
I want him to sing What's New, Pussycat.
Well, it might be politically incorrect to say What's New, Pussycat these days, because apparently he got into trouble for singing Delilah, because after 50 or 60 years since it was first recorded, and we've gone through it all in our heyday, and Bucket and I used to listen to the top 40 on 3UZ and all that sort of thing, we found out all of a sudden that Delilah is a politically incorrect song. It's about violence.
Yes. That's what David was saying earlier. I couldn't believe it.
What about all those old songs? Who shot Liberty Valance and all that? Are they all not supposed to come out anymore now? I mean, Hard Day's Night by the Beatles is probably a bloke having a big night on the How's Your Father or something.
The way I say it, Dick, I can't understand why we don't put the young talent of Australia on the world stage and let the
Bucket,
rest of the people see what sort of talent we have
in
Australia.
What a silly suggestion that is.
I'm saying that
tongue-in-cheek, mate, because it really is not rocket science, is it?
No, it isn't.
And when you think of it as a channel like Channel 7, who at the moment are right in the middle of their big rating period with X Factor, they've got so much talent there. Yeah. Why couldn't they bring those kids out and sing some songs? It does a twofold effect. Promotes them and promotes the station. They do station promos in the ad breaks anyway. Want to put the real thing up on the stage? Like that Brothers Three, they could have got out there and knocked the crowd socks off, or Marlissa, and those are the ones there, or the big bloke that plays the drums and all that sort of stuff.
We've got to learn.
Mr. T, whatever he is, the big bloke.
The people who pick these artists to come to Australia, they've been in there for too long. We've got to get rid of those and get some fresh thinking blood.
And Olivia, I like Olivia, but gee, I thought she was very, very, very insipid singing there.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. The breakfast program this morning was saying that they didn't like Tom Jones. They'd give Ed sort of a miss, but they thought Olivia was fantastic, where I would have said the other way around. I thought she was out of time for the national anthem, and I hated how all these singers come in and they want to put their own stamp on the national anthem.
That's why you get someone like Julie Anthony.
Correct.
Who's the only
one
that's...
listening to me?
Oh, sorry, mate. But she's the only one who sings the song correctly.
Were you listening to me, Ellie? Because that's exactly what I said.
Well, I don't blame you, mate, because I think that's what everybody does admit to, that Julie Anthony is the only one that can sing the song properly. You're right. You get some people going there and they've got this way of trying to sing it or upbeat it, or they do their little things in the middle of it all. It's just the national anthem. Yeah. Sing it properly. Now, in Lilivia's defence, because as you know, I did sing the... Oh, geez, what happened then? It's all right.
Just Liz from next door.
It's all right. God, such a fright then. I didn't mean dry cleaner, and I know exactly how I felt then. Where was I?
I don't know.
You were saying that people put their own...
You've got to remember, Bucket, and Bucket will back me up on this, I sang the national anthem at a grand final, so Libby and I... Libby, there you go, Bucket and I sang grand final national anthem.
Would you just give us a few bars?
Oh, no.
We've bagged enough people to sing the grand final today, and national anthem today. But seriously, when I sang it, I can remember the band took off in one direction, I was going off in another direction, and the big sound system around the ground, that was 3 minutes behind as well, so they had three lots of national anthems booming over. I felt a bit sorry for Olivia because the band really just took off, but they were probably doing it in the correct time,
but
she couldn't keep up.
You've got an earpiece in your ear that is, you know, in line with what the band is. You don't listen to the sound system around because that's going to be delayed. You have it in your earpiece. So, I mean, Tom Jones was able to sing in time.
Oh, and I must admit his voice is still fantastic, but the choice of songs were terrible.
Yes.
And when he did sing one that we all know, it was like he was on a go slow with it for some reason.
Because sadly, that was the one that involved the crowd, wasn't it?
Well, the crowd could have really got the heads up with the
mic.
Well, they tried to, but he was too slow again.
Oh, was he?
I thought it was too slow. But anyway, look, we're stopped. We're whinging on him. But the highlight, without any doubt to me, was the actual holy grail of grand finals, Mike Brady singing up there, Cazaly.
Yeah,
I thought that was sensational. And that did get the crowd going.
Someone said that he put a new verse into that song.
Oh.
Did you? I didn't notice it. And someone said it this morning on this station. I thought, what was that new verse? I didn't know it.
Well, it's the second verse, same as the first.
Lost me. But it's popular. Each and every year it's sung. That time when they didn't do it, there was a big outcry from the public of Australia. They certainly want that type of stuff in there where they can all join in, don't they?
Yep, I agree. But apart from all that... Remember the balloons used to go off? Remember we were sat there at the old days? We say old days, but it wasn't that long ago. They'd bring in these massive big bags of balloons, and they'd go around the boundary, and the whole boundary line right around the ground had all these balloons ready to go off, and the sides came out, and the balloons were released. Now, do you reckon, you know why they don't do that now, Bucket?
I don't know why, Dick.
Because it could be a danger for aircraft now.
Yes, there was a bit of criticism of the aeroplane had come across very low too. They frightened a few people
We all knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, well,
and people there reckon that it was a very scary thing, and they didn't see it coming. They'll pick up their footy record. You had it on Friday morning and said Virgin was going to be a Virgin flying over the ground.
Yes, that's what David came in to say this morning as well. He said that Bucket already knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
But yesterday at the Glenferrie Oval, they actually released some streamers, I think, for Hawthorn, but they didn't sort of factor in that northerly wind that we had yesterday, about 30 knots, and the streamers ended up blowing onto the railway line and apparently delaying trains because they got caught up in the power lines and started to smoulder.
Did you hear that? Even Bucket and I can remember the old days at Glenferrie Oval. You'd be standing on that outer wing where the trains go past and you'd see the 305 heading towards Lilydale and it would look like it was going to come straight at you into the crowd, and then it did a sudden turn, didn't it?
Yes,
and to this day, I would like to question whether that's a very safe railway line. No one cared back then, but a big red rattler was coming straight at you. You could actually see it coming right at you, straight at you, and then it would do that last minute turn away from the crowd.
Yeah.
It was pretty good days out of Cleveland. Good to see that old ground looking so good.
Oh, yes. And it's a pity they can't use those sort of grounds too, isn't it? Because I realise the crowds and that, they can't fit the crowds in and everything.
Well, don't worry about it down here in Geelong. I can only get 20,000 down there.
But at the same time, when you look at some of these home ground advantages, I think Hawthorn had a big home ground advantage there.
Oh, no doubt at Glenferrie.
That's got to come. That argument's got to come up.
There was 6 inches of mud on that ground. That was in the summer.
that was right. But all grounds were like that. Remember, Waverley used to be a shocker. Down here, Geelong used to be a shocker.
Victoria Park was a shocker. That
was
very
just
antiquated.
Black patches, wasn't it?
That's a good. But seriously, though, good to see the Hawks supporters back there. And of course, they went out. The South Melbourne or the Sydney Swan supporters went out to their old traditional hunting ground out at Albert Park, which looks nothing like the old South Melbourne ground anymore. Except like Hawthorn, the old grandstand is still there, which brings back a lot of memories for a lot of people.
Oh, it certainly does. Yeah, that used to be great there too. Yeah, really. Not far out of the city, just down the road.
Those grandstands were absolute iconic, weren't they?
They
you could pick them out at every ground. ground. That one at South Melbourne, the one at Hawthorn looks still sensational. Yeah. The one at the old Fitzroy Ground still stands at Brunswick Street. Yeah. That's a magnificent looking thing. I don't know if they kept any at North Melbourne. I think they pulled it all down,
and basically you can go in there and watch training at any time you like because there's no fences, no nothing there.
And there's still that beautiful standard punt road at the Richmond Ground too. It's a magnificent structure, and I hope they never pull them down. And it's a sad thing about Geelong. They've just been talking recently in the paper about the Cryo Oval, of course, back in the 1850s, 1860s. When I first came, I know you've been there many times as a child bugger at that time, but I can remember when I first came to Geelong, and of course the games were played at then Cadinia Park, and I went out to the gardens and I saw the old Cryo Oval was still there, and that old stand was still standing. And I always used to think, what a wonderful structure it is, and yet they still pull those things down, don't they?
And it's gone now.
But the old grandstand could have stayed. Yeah. They could have done it up and made it some sort of a, you know, kiddies playground, whatever.
That's where East Geelong and Thompson should have been playing at a ground like that.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, I agree. But anyway, no, it's sad to see those old stands going. There's one in Geelong still standing, which is the flower stand at the Geelong West Oval.
Oh, yes. That's,
beautiful old blue stone stand. Sorry, Mitch, we're reminiscing.
No, I was just going to say we might go to a track of music now, see what the professor's got lined up for us. Then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about the grand final, a couple of other talking points. And also I want to go through a couple of highlights and lowlights of the AFL season. So if everyone can start thinking about maybe a highlight and a low light that they want to talk about. And also I think there's a bit of developing news in local football with some appointments and that type of thing, so we'll come back and chat about that. This is Mitchell's Front Page on The Pulse. It is 24 minutes to 11. There's Fleetwood Mac, a bit of a track there that some of us are hearing just for the first time, in fact probably most of us, but I'm told it's the title track off their album called Say You Will. We're here with the Monday football panel on The Pulse.
This is Mitchell Dye with Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And back to talking about the grand final. I have to say on Twitter, I spoke over the weekend saying that Hawthorn's win was absolutely fantastic, great achievement. But I had to remind people that it wasn't quite up there with Geelong's 119-point victory back in 2007. But a few of the Hawks fans on Twitter didn't seem to like that analogy that I drew. What did you think of that?
Well, it was funny because they were talking about record scores throughout the game and everything like that, and I'm thinking they weren't anywhere near it, a lot of them, because I hate to bring this one up, but Collingwood got absolutely belted by Richmond in 1980. Like, that was goodness knows what the final score that was, because I never found out. They were just a long way behind when I got the socks and caught the train back to Victoria Park. But and, of course, you mentioned 2007. That was a massive win by the Cats, and I guess a lot of Port Adelaide people would be saying, just that couple of points they missed out on making the grand final, could they have done the same thing against the Sydney Swans?
They may have. They just may have.
Because Sydney Swans are a bit like Port Adelaide on that day.
Yeah.
They really didn't come to play at all, did they? They just had a very lacklustre attitude about them, I thought.
Oh, yes. I think one of the real features of this grand final was Luke Hodge, Dick, by G.
The boy from Colac.
What a wonderful performer. Yeah, you know, like the boy from Colac, you know, like he used to get back to Colac, you know, when he first went down to Hawthorn, he'd muck up a little bit on the Saturday nights, you know, going out for the entertainment and everything like that. But once they got him out of Colac, they certainly turned him into a great individual. And he's got a real rival up there in Aaron Finch in the world cricket scene too. So they've produced two great sportsmen, gee whiz. And it's a wonderful achievement by both guys. And I just think that, you know, Luke Hodge has now got to be in one of the greatest teams ever from the Hawthorn Football Club, the way he performed. You know, played in three premierships, you know, two medals, you know, best on grounds and that type of stuff.
Yep.
A wonderful leader, yeah. Like, and not only that, in the three premiership sides he's played in, he's been in their best players each and every time. So what a wonderful achievement by that guy.
Yep. And of course, Hodgie, he came out on the ground with his kids to start the game off. It just goes to show, and I always think there's a sign sometimes, that when you see players on a grand final, where normally they would be so much on edge that nothing can persuade or dissuade from their concentration, the fact that they still were able to bring their kids onto the ground showed to me that he was totally relaxed, Hodgie, wasn't he? He had his kids and everything.
Mitchell.
And Sam Mitchell, they've always been the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's an old cliche and everyone gets a bit bored with it, but they are a happy team at Hawthorn.
Oh, yeah.
And there is no doubt about that. They're a very relaxed, committed club.
The other thing that they got me too was the total amount of children that it was out there with the Hawthorn players.
It wasn't
so
about
many.
Like,
I didn't have time to count them. By gee, it's a wonderful, you know, really great. It's just not a young man's game, but we see a lot of guys in their 30s and that, so where they've got children and that.
And Hawthorn have just just become an absolute family club, haven't they?
Oh, have they? What? No, they've built that up, like in the last few years. You know, just remember the time when they, on the verge of merging, you know, with the Melbourne Football Club. That would have been a disaster, you know, really, if that had happened.
We didn't touch on the early part of the game with the lapse of honour by the retiring players. I think that's a very important part of the game, and I enjoyed that. Critical of Channel 7, whereby they showed about five or six, and then they went to an ad break. Before they went to the ad break, Craig Willis, the voice of the MCG, and he was doing the complete commentary on who was in the cars and everything like that. When they came back from the ad break, the cars were still going around, but there was no more commentary anymore. So not only did they break the sequence, which I thought was pretty poor, they then brought it back and we had no commentary at all. But obviously, great to see Louis Richards there. I think that was a pretty emotional time. 92 years of age. He probably didn't have much real clue where he was, really, in a lot of ways. But, gee whiz, the crowd knew exactly who he was. And he's just a much-loved personality of the AFL scene. There's no doubt about that.
It certainly is. I didn't see the umpires come out onto the ground, Dick. Did they miss telecast and that real feature of a grand final where we could give the umpires a bit of a hoot?
Man, they don't do that anymore.
I wonder why they don't do that. I used to love hooting the umpires.
Yeah, I know. It's a bit too manufactured now sometimes, Buck. And, of course, we are getting a bit old and grumpy, but, I mean, you're right. Sometimes it's just too robotic the way the whole pre-match is set up now with the AFL.
Anyway. I think that they should have the umpires, coming onto the ground. But one of the interesting points of criticism about the Channel 7 coverage was that the ads were broadcast in HD, but the picture was apparently a bit fuzzy. Now, I noticed that was probably the case in some of the longer shots, looking at the crowd, but closer up, it worked quite well.
Everything after half time, and I looked at the TV on Sunday, looked a bit fuzzy. I don't know what that was, whether it was HD, analog, or just my eyesight going a bit strange.
Well, we haven't really talked much about what went wrong for Sydney. I mean, everyone was saying that they were going to be the favourites. Did they not stand up and perform, or were Hawthorn just unbeatable on the day?
Stage struck. Absolutely stage struck they were, which is funny because both sides have got a lot of finals experience.
2012.
But the Sydney Swans just weren't in it. Can't blame Buddy. He booted four. Yeah. Looked all right, too. He got plenty of possessions and played very well. When you look at the blokes like Luke Hodge and Sam Mitchell and Lewis, and Roughhead, they just week after week, they're consistent. They don't go missing no matter what, and they come out and they played such a great leadership game on Saturday. Yeah. It was just great to see.
I think what we've seen over the years and how the clubs, they've got those guys down there 6 days a week and they spend several hours at a club so they can sort of rehearse so many different things, how they're going to go about things. And basically, they don't miss anything. But one of the interesting things was Clarkston. He went overseas. He went to America and done a study over there before the season started. So he's come back with some ideas that he's put into the he's put into the Hawthorn Football Club. So basically, I think coaches have now got to look at other sports the way they go about things.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, I've got something I want to bring up, today's take.
This is never good.
No. Now, we did hear, of course, that Heath Shaw was picked up by the police in a car.
Oh, yeah. What?
A little bit of abuse to the policeman. But
allegedly.
Allegedly. It's a fact. And he got fined because the fine has happened. But the comment I make is, and I'm still waiting for it to come out in the media, that it was in the early hours of Saturday morning in a car with his brother, Reece.
Yeah.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, is that not the same Reece Shaw that had to play in a grand final that same day?
I don't know how that worked out.
All right, I'll save you the agony bucket. Yes, it was the same Reece Shaw. It was his brother Reece was in the car, whether he was driving or he was a passenger. But my comment is, what is an AFL footballer doing out in the early hours of Saturday morning on the same day they've got to be playing in a grand final? I thought they were under some sort of a curfew. That they've got to stay in their rooms and not go out partying or driving their brother around or attending nightclubs or whatever they were doing at that time of the morning. Luckily, Reece Shaw had a lot of possessions and played a great game. But I'll tell you what, I'd be asking questions if I was Johnny Longmore and saying, what were you doing?
He will ask questions.
Well, why didn't the media pick that up? Normally they're into it like a bit of cancer.
Oh, yes, so they had other things to celebrate, didn't they? Now, what about the other event that went on at the MCG?
I think I know what you're getting at.
Go on, talk about her. Talk about it.
Well, I can remember, we used to see quite a deal of that, many, many years ago.
When 1981.
They used to race 91. Across the MCG and all that type of thing. And the lady from Darwin, was it? She made herself very, very famous, didn't she?
With Bruce Doole.
Bruce Doole, that's
didn't
right.
Didn't know what to say, did he? But to this day, he hasn't said a word. He's never said a word before then anyway. But I tell you what, the girl that, on the lady, I should say, on Saturday in the corporate box by a major construction company, they say.
Yeah.
Where she's a professional disrober.
Oh.
Yes.
You know what a disrober is?
No, I don't. No,
you
I don't
want to know, do you?
We can imagine.
I've never been in that sporting field.
It's not really a sport. But she disrobed and did a bit of an entertainment for those in the corporate box. But as the Mayor of Melbourne said on another station this morning, he's quite sure that a lot worse things have happened on those corporate boxes over the years.
Well, that's the point I was trying to get at was... you can do whatever you want in your own corporate box that is legal, but the issue is that the glass all the way around means that people from outside can see in. But if it's your own closed-off corporate box and people from outside can't see in, then surely that would be acceptable. It's illegal, isn't it?
Well, apparently so. I don't know whether it's legal. In fact, she threw her part of her underwear out the window.
Companies can entertain clients as they wish.
But of course, Tom Jones was entertaining, so she was trying to throw them at Tom, which most women did in the 60s. And I think she's about 73 rows short of hitting him. That's the only problem. But never mind. No, that would have been interesting, wouldn't it, bugger?
Oh, well, it's not quite in my field.
No, I know that. I realise that. No, but if you're in the boxes beside that particular corporate box.
Yes, but... you and I wouldn't get up into those
wouldn't
boxes.
Have noticed have certain, wouldn't have noticed. Wouldn't have noticed.
Qualifications just, to get up in there.
Would have enjoyed my oyster and my Crown Lager and just my own business.
Think you need a spare $20,000 to $25,000, don't you, to get up into a corporate box?
Oh, you've got to be invited. The only way to get one is to be invited as a guest, I can tell you. I have been lucky a couple of times, but I tell you what, to actually own one of those boxes, you've got to be travelling along pretty nicely, I think.
I'd say so, but they're always full, though, aren't they? You get in there on a normal
always
game,
what?
Yeah. They're always full.
Yeah,
probably, I'm talking about people being in there, yes.
Yeah, I know,
so some of them might be full the other way too.
I know. Now, we're talking about before some of the highlights of the year and the lowlights.
Yes, that's good. I wanted to hear.
And I guess we'd have to agree that one of the lowlights constantly was the ASADA thing. Just would not go away, Bucket, would it?
True.
Would not go
that's
away.
That's exactly right.
And is it finally over, or we're going to be talking about this time next year again?
Well, they should come to a final verdict and get it over and done with, you know, as soon as possible. Not to let it linger, you know, just the way it has been, because it's just put a blight on not only the Essendon Football Club, but it's put a blight on in sport in general.
It has,
and that's
hasn't it?
Yeah, that,
and
that's
we're,
right.
And look, we are sick to death of it.
Yeah.
I would have thought by now, if it was a murder trial, it would have been well and over and done with by now. It's just been going on and on and on like the Murray River.
Yeah. One of the highlights for me has been the 6.5 million people who have gone to AFL football this year in Australia. You know, that's up a bit, mainly because of the Adelaide sides. They've been pulling big crowds over there. Like, it's very interesting to read that one in every 28 Australians are now a member of an AFL club. So that's a high number, isn't it?
That's an incredible number.
That's just unbelievable.
And having said all of that, the increase in popularity in country footy has escalated as well. So I think it's been a win-win situation.
Yeah, I think the charges, what they charge at the AFL games has brought a lot of that about because, you know, and we're starting to see real quality football in at country football levels now because the coaching staffs are getting better, the administration staffs are getting better and everything like that. They're putting a lot more detail into what they're doing. It's like St. Joey's picking up Maxwell. Like, he'll take a lot of new ideas into the St. Joey's club and that.
Massive.
And I understand some of these ideas are creeping out into the local areas too.
No, it'd be great. A lot of these players, when they do retire from AFL and they come back to their grassroots footy club, like Scarlett did, and now Nick Maxwell, it's a great thing for local footy, but great for the development of up-and-coming kids coming through as well.
Oh, yeah, certainly, isn't it? And they certainly want them. You've got to get right down to the under, you know, little tackers who go out there on a Sunday morning and have a bit of a kick and, you know, learn a bit about football. And if they can take that right through, that because that's where, you know, players like Luke Hodge and Lewis and those sort of guys did start in their football, you know, with the little tackers. They didn't walk into senior sides, you know, when they were 18 or 19 and go from there. They were in there when they were juniors.
That's right. We talk about football dynasties too. A lot of father and sons going through footy. Nothing better than to see young Will Langford played such a great part in the game with probably the goal of the day, probably. But the fact that, of course, his dad, Chris, an absolute decorated footballer with the Hawks back in the halcyon years of the 80s. We call them the halcyon years. It's about going to call them the halcyon years now, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Because we talk about old days when the clubs were great, but this Hawthorn club is rewriting their own club history books at the moment.
And the one thing about the Hawthorn, you know, football club, you know, he was one of many. It took a long time to get into the Hawthorn side. But also, they brought in seven players from other clubs. I know it's that's a big gamble when you start bringing players in. But by gee, each and every one of those seven players that come into the Hawthorn Football Club over the years have been absolutely first class, haven't they?
Mm.
And basically, that's where some clubs are falling down. Like in the past, they haven't just picked the right men. Yeah,
yep.
I think there's a few questions have been raised down there at the Geelong Football Club with Mitch Clark and those sort of guys. Yeah, are they the right men? Yeah, time will tell, though.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more, Bucket. Couldn't agree more.
Yes. Well, we might go to another track of music just before 11 o'clock. Unravelled coming up next with Patrick. A little bit light on for conversation, of course, being only one game. But I do just want to touch on this local football story and wrap up after this. You're on 94.7 The Pulse. Thank you, Courtney. We're just about there for the day, but on page 41 of the Advertiser, it's got a report to do with Lara, and it said it's going to be placing the youthful rebuild in the hands of respected development coach Adrian McBean. So there you go. Well, there's time for one last word or sentence each, because we are pushed for time. So react to that or say whatever you want. Dick?
Right. One little memo I've just written to the AFL. Just on Bucket's comments about the great crowd improvement this year, and fantastic to see people supporting sport. But memo to the AFL, no more Monday night games, no more Thursday night games, no more Twilight Sunday games.
We could see that coming.
Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, you'll get it right, boys.
One word, Bucket.
Bring admission down.
Thank you so much, guys. It's been a pleasure with you over the football season. Unravelled is next with Patrick. They're going to have Nick Hudson on the program. And I'm back tomorrow from 9 a.m. and also this afternoon from 3. You're on The Pulse.
Stay in touch with Mitchell's Front Page online, where you can keep talking about the issues of the day, listen to previous interviews, and connect on Facebook and Twitter. Head to mitchellsfrontpage.com. You can even podcast the show to your phone, computer, or device. That's mitchellsfrontpage.com. Brought to you by Cario Waste Management, station sponsor.